the day.
This is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Dropped into Juicebox Radio, where sexuality educators quench your search for responsible, progressive sexuality over your lifespan.
Don't touch that dial. You are exactly where you want to be. You've landed in Juicebox Radio on CITR 101.9 FM. Or maybe, could you be one of our online listeners at CITR.ca? If you ever miss a show, you can download the podcast at juiceboxradio.com. Tonight's show is all about psychosexualis, unusual sex practices and acts. All in preparation for Julia and I to attend the Bizarre Fetish Ball, which is going to be this Saturday in Vancouver. And we are going to be taking calls, so feel free to give us a call and contribute to the conversation we're going to be having. So you can do that at 604-822-2487. That's 604-CITR-UBC-CITR. And you'd think I'd know that phone number by now. But before we start off with the fetish ball stuff, I don't know. I do have a personal question.
Yeah.
Have you ever done a revenge fuck?
I don't think so. Not since high school. But I can understand. We're going to be talking a little bit more about that later in the show, actually, why people do these sort of things. There's a little bit in the psychosexualis. But I know that you have a personal story or one of a friend of a friend. And I'd love you to share that right away. So
the other
it's a
day,
good one. It's a good one.
It's a very good one. The other day, I was in my favorite restaurant and my favorite waitress. And I hope she's listening. She knows who she is, if you're listening out there. She had told me that she'd started asking me how my dating life was. And I told her I'm still celibate. And she told me that it was a good thing because she had just decided to indulge into younger men. She's 25. And she had met and started dating a 19-year-old, only to find out a few weeks later he was also fucking her best friend.
So the very, very unpleasant.
Very unpleasant.
So very unethical.
And not too cool. So what the two girls did was, and if you happen to be dining at Wheezy Bistro, you might have come across a man who was naked in the bathroom that who was crying because these two girls had told him that they wanted to have a threesome with him and invited him to the washroom in this restaurant and basically left him there, told him they'd be right back and stole all his clothes and left him there.
Oh, my God.
I thought it was a pretty great story.
Well, and he was very, very young boy, wasn't he, too?
He was a very young boy. He was 19 and very impressionable, and maybe he learned his lesson about don't make sure if you're going to fuck two girls, either be honest about it or make sure they're not friends. People do talk.
I think it's a good, I think it is a good thing that happened almost. I mean, it seems a bit extreme.
It's very extreme.
I would hope that would never happen to me, but yeah, you know, the revenge, the teaching of the lessons can sometimes be effective, I guess.
It's very effective. Actually, there's other revenge things, too. Julia and I have this history of waitresses telling us their barrel stories. Remember the Juanita story?
Oh, yes. I was going to say, it sounded more like a Juanita to me.
It does a little bit Juanita-like. Mm-hmm. Do you care to...
Well, I think, I mean, the Psychosexualis show tonight, I think we're going to be talking about several different practices that happen that are pretty... unusual, some of them that aren't so unusual. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Caroline and I both have some of these philias, as they like to call them, unusual sex practices ourselves. So we will, I mean, I will personally be telling you the ones that I think are part of my sexual
repertoire. And if you ask nicely and call and beg and plead, perhaps.
But I think the Juanita is sort of this revenge idea where... you know, if a man, the Lolita, Juanita, Lolita?
Lolita Juanita.
Was, if you're going to misbehave, then you might get one of these Lolitas on you or Juanitas, and that, you know, egging of the car or something, you know, poster. One was postering of...
and saying he was a pedophile or
yes,
something
a pedophile
like that
in the neighborhood.
This man is a pedophile, which is actually pretty bad because that's actually slander.
It is slander, and you should be careful. But
it
you
makes
know,
sense with the whole revenge fuck thing because people use that use sex for expression of power, which is kind of gets this full circle. Some of you guys might be wondering, Carolyn, why are you going off on this weird tangent again? And I do tend to go off on weird tangents, but the reason why I started with revenge fuck is because that's what, you know, it's all about people using sex for an expression of power, which is kind of what BDSM is all about in a lot of ways, mm-hmm, or at mm-hmm. least a lot of times it is. And I think revenge fucking is definitely an expression of that. But there's so much more weird, bizarre stuff out there.
I think there's definitely... can you speak into your mic a little bit?
I can.
I just think it sounds...
Would you like me to whisper in your ear?
It was just a little quiet last week. I listened to the podcast, which, by the way, I'm sorry, listeners, it was only half an hour. We're probably taking it off because I was just too rushed and there was too much hot Marion coming in here and getting me all convoluted.
Marion just gets her knickers wet.
He does. And so I got all kind of all a bit like, and then I didn't podcast properly. All right. We're talking tonight because my purpose to this Psychosexualis is to educate and to do so without censorship. So I think it's really important that people can hear a little bit more about that they could see themselves and hear themselves in different kinds of practices and say, oh, you know, okay, maybe I'm not so weird. Okay, maybe this is not so unusual. Because it does happen, and mm-hmm. people do these things. So I'm going to be directly reading from an encyclopedia of unusual sex practices by Brenda Love. She's a PhD. It was written quite some time ago, but, you know, being I hate to say this, but being highly educated as I am, even though this book is 15 years old, it still speaks a lot to what is happening. And I think it's actually one of the most concise ones. It is not one I recommend, you know, if you haven't got a lot of other education to read, you know, back to front, but it is a great description of the different kinds of practices that go on. What they like to call sometimes in sexology is philias, so paraphilias, other kinds of philias, which is not necessarily a positive way of describing things, but in some ways it is, like pedophilia and...
Staturephilia.
Yes, what's the staturephilia? Could you tell me again what that is?
Apparently it's obsession with statues. So I had this vision of an X-rated version of the movie Mannequins from the 80s.
Okay.
With people fucking mannequins and stuff like
right,
that.
Right.
Where it's kind of like a cross between instead
of
necrophilia.
Blow up doll. Blow up doll, I mean.
Oh, good point. A blow up doll would be. I was
they
kind
move
of,
a little bit more than statues.
Yes, they do.
But statues don't have erections and they don't have holes.
Unless it's the Eiffel Tower
fuck.
Or something. Can you imagine climbing atop the Eiffel Tower and trying to get that up the twat?
I don't know. But in this book, the unusual sex practices they had mentioned as part of the fake pussies is liver in a milk carton. As something to fuck.
Ew!
I was like,
ew!
was like, ew. Wow, as a form of masturbation.
Oh,
I was like,
that's
wow, okay.
So different than warm apple pie. I'm sorry.
Well, anyway, I have to say that this book, different practitioners, psychologists, biochemists, sexologists, and other sex experts have, we always have different ideas of what usual sex practices involve. So kind of gaining a consensus of opinion amongst all these different practitioners, like myself and other, you know, like the biochemists and the sexologists and stuff, it can be very challenging in the sexual world because there is no kind of governing body that speaks to all of this stuff in one space. So I think you can be confident in this particular show tonight that the descriptions is being as accurate as possible. But, you know, do feel free to call in or contact us with any feedback or additions.
Or anything you want us to look up.
Right. So many of the things we're going to be talking about tonight are behaviors which are enjoyed by the vast majority of individuals that do particularly have this philia, while others have actually been associated with injury or death. There's going to be a lot of, we're going to be sort of doing a middle ground. So some things that a lot of people do and some things that are like not necessarily very healthy. So anyway, objective information about human beings behave. Where you draw the line is your own personal informed choice. So let's hope that it is informed. I think the first one I wanted to talk about, not that it also starts with A, is these abrasions, because carpet burns on carpet, for example, people create abrasions by using different things like carpet and metal emery files and brushes and items that rough the skin, but they don't leave any residual particles of any type, and they kind of do this to themselves, to their nipples and to their penis or their labia, so that they can, it's sort of a small, slight torture that goes on because it helps build intensity as time passes and this pain thing that we're going to talk about later. This desired effect is actually simply to make the area much more sensitive to normal touch. So people will abrase themselves so that if you actually brush by it with your hand, it will be like, you know, and so that we're going to talk about pain later on in the show and why pain is such a big part of people's sexual experience and why they have so much pleasure in pain. But, you know, biting, we're going to talk about biting, blood sports. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of things people do to sensory enhancement.
Definitely.
Blindfolding, bondage, and all that stuff.
Yeah, no, definitely. I find the abrasion factor is...
You should be sitting over here, young lady.
I think
come I'll over come. Here. Come over here. I can't... I like sitting beside you. And I like you sitting beside me. So the next one is...
It's because you like it, because then I can touch you.
Yes, yes.
Don't you like that, little girl?
I do like that. I like that. Especially when you call me baby.
Oh, baby. You know the abrasion factor?
Yes.
I think that's why I like making out with men and not women.
Oh,
because
the beard.
I like the beard factor because it's really abrasive on my skin.
Right.
It's the same reason why I like men with chest hair, especially if they've shaved it that day and it's slightly prickly.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it rubs against my nipples, and I like that a lot. So I don't know, does that count, even though, because it technically is a burn.
Abrasions, yes. Well, I don't know. I don't know. I found this to be, I don't know, maybe it is.
It's not listed under there, so I was curious if that counted.
Well, I don't know. Let's ask Brenda Love if she's still alive. So acousticophilia, I thought that was very interesting, is sort of around sound. Person with an attachment becomes very aroused by sound. So sounds that might be in the form of music, song, love poems, verbal abuse, sexual commands, comments in a foreign language. Oh.
You bitch, lie down, get ready, let me fuck you. Fuck.
But there's also the groaning, the moaning, the sighing, the heavy breathing, and the other natural sounds. People that get off on that. So I think that's a very common philia. It's a very common thing that arouses people.
Eve Ensler's got a whole monologue about that.
Right, and group sex can be very exciting for a lot of people because of that, because they have all these multiple sounds happening all the time. I personally am a major acousticophilia. I have acousticophilia for sure.
I think I have a little bit of that because
I growl like an animal.
I also like fucking to Prince. It is. His music is music to fuck to. It's also music to dance to as well. Acrophilia.
This is interesting.
I think it's very interesting. And this refers to a person who is sexually aroused by heights. So skydiving,
bungee cord jumping,
and just high altitudes. I wonder if pole dancing counts.
Maybe.
Just like, I've never had sex upside down on a pole.
What I think was really funny about the acrophilia is that this is about the Mile High Club. So another popular form of acrophilia is having this sex at a high altitude. And I think some people belong to the Mile High Club. Now, maybe this is because you're actually in a plane and you're thinking, oh, everyone, let's belong to the Mile High Club and let's go and fuck in the bathroom. But there is actually, like, with the skydiving, bungee sex stuff, there is, like, the rush of blood, mm-hmm. the rush of the adrenalines. All that stuff can be sexually arising. And then there's also, under this acrophilia, there are people who claim to have been captured by creatures from outer space and impregnated while aboard flying saucers. And their stories have provided many with a sexual fantasy and one that is often acted out with the aid of readily available space costumes.
There's so many Trekkies out there.
So at this bizarre fetish ball, perhaps we'll see some acrophilia people out there, some Trekkers, exactly.
That would be really interesting. Although I have to admit, it would be really interesting to have sex skydiving. Can you imagine that? Like fucking in the air?
I can't even imagine jumping out of a perfectly good airplane myself, but I know a lot of people like to do that, so no. Now, acrotomophilia, this is one that they've done movies about. It's around people that get turned on by a person who's aroused with thought of having sex with an amputee. Or by fantasizing about it. So people, acrotomophiles, they convince a consenting partner to wrap their hand or foot in bandages. They basically, like, wrap them up and get their leg out of the way so it looks like they actually have only one leg or one arm. But if you think about the movie Crash, the old one, not the newer one.
Okay.
But the older one where there's all these, like, they actually set up scenes of major accidents where people are losing limbs or becoming, like, you know, all, like, bound up and scarred and things aren't working. So that is a sign of, that is an example or an expression of acrotomophilia.
That one's a really popular one.
It is a bit popular. It is really strange. There's some, in this book, they talk about why people are interested in these, in people.
And why is that?
Well, they said that, you know, vicarious sadism, sometimes low self-esteem, a legitimate excuse for poor performance, adjustment, sort of respect for the amputee's adjustment to a handicap, so just sort of wanting them to feel that they are sexy and loved as well, broken wing syndrome stuff in a real way. need to rescue or care for them, fear that this could this loss could happen to them, so they're kind of doing this honoring thing. People often, along with a lot of other philias and fetishes, people are exposed at an early age. So you get sexualized, certain things get sexualized at an early age, and you have an erotic reaction to things. And then as you get older, your erotic reaction becomes more and more fetishized and more philiaized. And so
that makes sense. A few weeks ago, we had Peter Tupper on as a guest talking about the history of BDSM. And one of the things we didn't get to was the penthouse letters versions of the amputee letters, which,
right.
And I think that was from magazines from the 1930s or 40s,
right.
Shortly, right around, I guess, 1939, so really close to Second World War.
Right.
And I thought it was really interesting about people getting very excited about fucking amputees and the fact that currently one of my current copies of Penthouse actually has that in there as well, about an amputee and getting how happy she is that men are crazy about her and wanting to fuck her.
Yeah.
Just a little bit more explicit now than it was back then.
I'm not sure exactly what it's about, but this book does speak about it being eroticized early, the safe objects in which to direct the people's lust, the low self-esteem thing that someone with a handicap would provide a secure relationship. But I think also just because maybe it's kind of taboo-ish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anyone with sort of any kind of handicap. It's not the right word.
I used to have a crush on Rick Hansen and Terry Fox. Does that mean I have that?
Ability, too? Some sort of disability.
But I know
Terry Fox, you liked him? Yeah, he was hot, though, you know. He was hot and he was missing a leg.
And I was 9.
Yeah.
Adultery.
Okay, so adultery is in here, which I think is kind of interesting. They have it aspistia, or open marriage, consensual, non-monogamy lifestyle that is not restrict number of partners. Adultery is sort of basically the word that was used 15 plus years ago. Most often the reason for engaging in adultery is this unbridled desire for ecstasy or passion. And second is the opportunity to fulfill basic needs that are not being met elsewhere. And third is the inability to say no.
Interesting.
And I think it's true, because when people have a lot of, you know, the times that I've cheated or been adulterous in my life have been my inability to say no, and it's this unbridled desire for ecstasy. Like, I basically a bit of a nympho. I was definitely a nympho when I was younger, so, you know, I couldn't get enough, and so one man was never enough for me anyway, or one partner. I had women, men, everything in between.
No, the only time I ever cheated was a revenge fuck, because he cheated on me first, and I cheated and made sure he knew. Ended up with a stalker,
right?
So that's a whole other show.
So I think in the adultery side of things, today, there seems to be a bit of differences between male and female affairs. I mean, the males seem to be able to differentiate. They're doing it to relieve stress, alleviate boredom, get revenge, lack of affection from a spouse, etc. Women sort of have affairs for different reasons. They tend to fall in love. They're kind of wanting more of a connection. So these are sort of different. I mean, we could do a whole other show about this. Mm-hmm. But I think moving on from adultery... which is an unusual sex practice. I don't know how unusual it really is.
I think it's pretty common.
I think it's pretty usual.
Might be changing more, too, with the whole polyamorous and stuff like that.
Yes.
Definitely. Where people are a little bit more open about wanting to sleep with other people and have relationships with other people.
Right. So there's other parts of this adultery thing, and that's candolism, cuckoldry, group sex, festivals, harems, illegal sex,
love potions,
marriage, menage a trois, prostitution, wife swapping, etc. Anyway, moving on to agoraphilia, which is sex in an open park. And I have to say, it refers to arousal from being sexual in public places. I definitely have this. I desire to have sex in the backyard, a park, other exposed area. People that have agoraphilia, they have an unusual level of excitement from being outdoors, and experience sexual excitement from being outdoors, just as agoraphobics experience fear from being outdoors. So that's a good one.
And that's one I've got, too.
Can you say that word?
Agoraphilia.
Yep.
And they're known to others to become about hearing the sound. So this can occur.
If they become aroused knowing that others might be able to hear them.
So it's basically being as loud as possible. I had that for a very long time in my early 20s until my ex and I moved in and rented space for my dad. And I was worried that my father could hear me fucking and having an orgasm. And after that, that kind of made me a little bit quieter, and I became a moaner, and I'm no longer a screamer.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think screaming is sort of something that you should leave for special occasions.
That's true.
I don't know. I mean, I've had some lovers that were screamers, and it was kind of like, oh, my God, can you please
be
quiet? You know, and I think growling is permitted, but just screaming kind of is like, shh, quiet. All right, so let's, before the end of this half hour, which is, I can't believe this, but we started 5 minutes early, is one that I think we're going to talk a little bit about right now, and it's quite common, and it talks, the bizarre fetish ball and all this BDSM business and everything else is all about, or very much about algolphilia. And algolphilia refers to pain and sexual arousal gained by pain sensations. Now, an algolphile may be involved in sadomasochism, but the majority are not. And actually, in Kinsey, who, you know, we can quote because he did do a lot of good research there on human sexual behavior, one of the few researchers that just did about a million interviews with people, 50% of the people that he surveyed admitted feeling sexual arousal from being bitten. Now, that was the one thing that he did ask a question about and found across the board very common. So the bitten thing, I think, not necessarily biting for blood or anything, but just being gnawed on, chewed on, you know, and exactly, right? And I have to admit, I do feel sexually aroused by a little bit of pain, not too much.
It depends where you're being bitten.
And where you're being bitten.
And in all honesty, Anne Rice actually has created a whole thing about that, where people fantasize about being vampires, essentially.
Right.
Actually, at the fetish ball, there were a lot of people who had the fake cap teeth.
You were at one just last weekend. So
at the fetish party, rather.
Right, fetish party.
Yeah,
Sin City.
Mm. And there were quite a few of the guys, actually, who had those. And it reminded me of the vampire Lestat and how sexy it would be and how erotic it would be for them to sink their teeth into my neck. I thought that could be pretty hot.
Mm-hmm. Well, this registration of pain, actually, is caused by a release of chemicals. You could have probably imagined that chemicals in our body, they're hard to pronounce. Prostaglandins and substance P, they call it bradykinin. They're all sort of divided into two types of registration of pain. There's somatic and there's visceral. Now, somatic pain most often occurs in the muscles or the skin, so it's kind of on the outside, the free nerve endings that lie near the surface of the skin. Now, that somatic pain is what can cause the pleasure and feelings associated with pleasure. The visceral pain is kind of deeper internal organs. It causes nausea and weakness.
Hmm.
Sometimes people enjoy that as well. They'll get that nausea rush or that weakness rush, and that's what really gets them off because they have this visceral pain. But, like, for example, the testicles are part of the visceral system. Hmm. And if you have any kind of injury to the testicles, it basically goes into that nauseous gut feeling where you feel a bit of weakness and a bit of nausea. Some people get really off on that, though. But I think the somatic pain is what's really more common one. People really activate that brain system and the chemicals come out. And it can get you off. I mean, it also affects your mood and the anxiousness
I think it's the flight or fight syndrome as well, where it would kick that in, and your the huge endorphin rush from that.
Right. So if you're like tense and anxious, things that touch you or hit you on your somatic level are going to hurt more.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're actually sexually aroused and you're feeling safe and you're feeling in control and you submit to the partner, the sensations become more and more pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very interesting kind of thing in the brain. There's been a lot of studies about it. But people playing with pain normally desire to create enough to trigger the release of the chemicals within that sort of anesthetic, euphoric, trance-like quality, like being spanked, having that constant flogging, that constant whack, 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 harder, and then softer, 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 hard, you know, like all that stuff that kind of gets you into a trance, like gets the chemicals going.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of why BDSM is, you know, part of that whole bondage, getting beaten and things is working for a lot of people. It's interesting. I mean, there's biochemical stuff going on, right? And it's sort of modern society has been viewing pain as this affliction and doing everything possible to inhibit its effects. But I think someday we're getting to have more and more of a better understanding of the biochemical properties that pain can prove to have. And there's some therapeutic value. I always sort of thought, like, BDSM, like, oh, my God, everyone's kind of messed up. They've got this sort of, like, past of, like, being abused or, like, some kind of association with power and sex and that I didn't think was necessarily super healthy, not something that I necessarily would want to engage in.
It depends how extreme.
But I'm sort of starting to see that there might be some way, some ability to recuperate from emotional trauma. And a friend of mine, I won't name names, of course, a friend of mine this past weekend on a retreat came to my workshop that I gave on sex, love, intelligence and having people talk about their fantasies. And she's a tantric practitioner, but she also recently had done a BDSM experience. And she thought, you know, how do I bring BDSM into tantra? How do I bring pain into tantra? Because she sort of started to realize the recuperative emotional trauma stuff that she can get from the whole practice of being spanked, for example. And she's a very gentle soul, and really I found it a very challenging question. And one of the people in the workshop said, you know, you just have to name it, rename it, something else, create a new way to express spanking in tantra and pain in tantra. And I've started to sort of really think, you know, there might be some healing properties to BDSM, some sort of ways of recuperating from emotional trauma that might happen from being dominated and abused or spanked or whatever that goes on in these scenes that can go on for months and years.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the thing about bondage and discipline is that it can go on for months and years, unlike our normal sex scenes, which can go on, you know, from 20 to minutes to a few hours.
Or so, 2 minutes.
Yeah. Anyway, this emotional pain, you know, stuff, I think people suppress it.
Mm-hmm.
Psychological pain, they suppress it. And maybe if you do BDSM healthfully and ethically, you can beat that shit out of yourself. Which can help, you know, save yourself from, I don't know, God, cancer, whatever.
That'd be
other
cool if that works.
Yeah. Hello, get me back. Here we are. Yes, that's your turn to talk now, honey, as
Is
I do this.
Is it my turn to talk? Okay.
Help me.
Well, you know what? Let's just keep that dial locked. And everybody, just give us a call and tell us what you want to know, because you are listening to Psycho Sexualis on Juicebox. And we really, 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 really welcome your calls. We want to hear what you want to talk about. So please call us in at 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. And Juicebox is featured on CITR 101.9 FM. We're going to be right back.
Would you like to help students improve their standings in math and English on provincial exams? Would you like to improve your own skills for teaching and leadership? Do you plan on entering the PDP program or law enforcement, youth work, BSW, or medicine? Volunteer as a tutor in an innovative program at QE Secondary School in Surrey in this midweek after-school program. In its 12th year, it has proven to be a rewarding experience for students and volunteer tutors. Contact Ms. Bond at 604-581-3476, 604-581-3476, or email bond_ats@hotmail.com.
Well, my father says you're nifty,
and you've heard of Baudelaire,
and we both agree that human rights abuses are unfair. You understand your feelings,
and you're not afraid to share,
and I think I could do something with your hair. You smell nice,
and you're groovy,
and we both like foreign movies.
My mother says you have that touch of class.
Well, I can see a shining future
where we'll dialogue and nurture.
But there's one last thing I feel I need to ask.
Do you take it in the ass? Do you take it in the ass? 'Cause you're beautiful and curvy, but unless you're kind of pervy, there's no way you and me are gonna last. Do you take it in the ass? Do you take it in the ass? When it comes to brains, you've got 'em, but unless you play the bottom, I'm afraid I'm gonna have to take a pass. Well, you're adorable, reliable, but is your anus pliable? That's the information that I need. Well, you would do it if you love me. If you're nervous, squat above me, you'll be able to depth and speed. Do you take it in the ass? Do you take it in the ass? 'Cause I've ordered in a shipment of the relevant equipment. I've got lubricant and poppers and some brass. Do you take it in the ass? Do you take it in the ass? If you need more information on this type of penetration, we can always take a correspondence class. You see, I'm not the kind of fella who can get off on vanilla. No, I need a little color in my sex.
Well, honey pie, it just so happens that I brought my day-glow strap on and some mescaline to heighten the effect.
Ready?
Do you take it in the ass? Do you take it in the ass? Ooh, do you take it in the ass?
Education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Juicebox Radio. It sounds like such a weird term. Psychosexualis.
It just means the psychology of sexuality.
And that was, would you take it in the ass? And that's for Jody and Luscious for Luscious Dance. And that's because she loves that song and wants to do a pole dance routine to it, which I don't think she'll be doing at the Underwear Affair, even though that's this weekend. But that's going to be one of them, which leads us into the Juice Berries, which if you're going to do the run, you definitely should do the Underwear Affair. It's for cancers below the waist, including male cancers and female cancers. So you get to see a whole bunch of people in their ginch, and yours truly is going to be dancing there, both with Luscious Dance and the Aradia Dance Team as well. Other Juice Berries, which we mentioned earlier today, is the Babylon Entertainment and Den 6 Entertainment. They invite you to the Bazaar, the first annual Vancouver Fetish Ball, and it's going to be at Richards & Richards and in Vancouver this Saturday, as I said, Saturday the 7th of July. And Julia and I will definitely be there, so you get to see us in sexy, 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 sexy clothing, so come meet us. And two tickets will be given away if you email us at julia@juiceboxradio.com during the show tonight. Say you heard about the bizarre fetish ball on Juicebox, mm-hmm. and you and a guest will get in for free. Or you can check out the website if you'd like at bizarrefetishball.com for tickets and event information.
And I think it would be really cool if you did, because we didn't get anyone emailing us last week about that. And, you know, they're like expensive tickets, so.
Maybe they're worried about us flogging them, Julia.
Maybe.
Or biting.
Biting. Or scratching.
Screaming in their ears like, oh, yeah.
No, like screaming in their ears like, yeah. We could.
On a lighter note, maybe the Tantric Satori event
mm-hmm.
might be a good one, which is a combination of Buddha Hill Tibetan Tantra and Satori Express. And this process is a device for finding deep connection with oneself, which is the base of connecting harmoniously to another human being, which I think is really important.
Yeah, especially in your celibacy right now.
I like my celibacy. Masturbation, uh-huh. my fingers are my best friend.
Fabulous. Keep those nails shorter, though. I'm worried. But you can find out more by going to buddhahill.de. These are guys
I like
from
the abrasion.
Germany. They're doing a 3-hour Tantric Satori night this coming Monday in East Vancouver. And it's very affordable, a very powerful space to learn about yourself and to learn about Tantra. You can email Chamira at buddhahill.de.
Oh, and you know what? We have one more event.
Oh.
I think we've got the rendezvous thing, don't we, next week? Which,
yes,
let's see if we can beat our record in terms of
dates.
How many dates we can get out of this.
Yes.
You know what, Julia? Does it really count? Because we got all these guys who said that they wanted to date us, but neither of us followed up on any of them.
I did go on one date with the chiropractor, remember? He went on dates with the other people and did the exact same thing and said the same thing, so... A sign of a freaky person. All right, so let's go on with Psycho Psycho.
I wasn't sure if you were reading from the book or if you're talking about that person, the Cairo.
I wonder if
he's into a crack fetish.
Butt crack?
Yeah, totally. Butt crack, let me look at your butt crack and let me crack your back at the same time. Nice deep inhale and...
Well, speaking of buttholes, there is two different things. There's anolinctus, which is licking the anus... And then there's anolingus, which is rimming, which is actually sticking the tongue in the anus.
Well, you want to make sure it's clean beforehand, and hopefully they've had an enema.
Some people like to have it au naturel. Others wish you to clean first. I prefer you to clean first. I'm not into the spicy, peppery flavor of the poo. I've had too much experience already.
Imagine if they ate steak beforehand.
I don't know. Anyway, whatever. She just hit her head on the thing. Did you hear that? Okay. So there's blindfolding. I think that there's like one of the senses. I think our biggest sense is our visual sense. You know that? And so the rest of our senses are actually starting to die off. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that, actually.
As humans, our senses, our sense of sight. So I think that it's really important that you blindfold each other and fuck each other like that.
But then why do everybody keep their eyes shut half the time when they're fucking?
That's why. I think just touching
the sensation
into, yes, other sensations. I find it really hard to look in my lover's eyes. It's so intimate. It's like, oh, my God.
It makes me laugh.
And then there's body painting, which I thought was very interesting because I have a friend who body paints a lot, and I think it's a very sexy, sensuous thing to do. But it's also, it's very tribal, historic. There's bondage.
Bondage. I was going to say, in terms of the body paint factor, if you do go to Opus and actually buy
some decent paint.
Yeah, decent paint brushes, because a lot of times brushes that you buy at places like Art of Loving, which I do, they're a great shop, but they tend to be those skinny little brushes and you can't really paint properly with them. So if you're going to do it well. And in all honesty, what's way more fun is painting with chocolate sauce.
Or Nutella for a lot of people.
I love Nutella. You just
I
need to put
so
down plastic sheets.
I had too much when I was young, so I'm allergic now.
Oh, no. It's better than toothpaste. Toothpaste in the pussy actually
burns. Be careful with
the
toothpaste on the genitals. Do not use toothpaste on your genitals, people.
I've done
Unless you're into pain, perhaps.
It's not fun.
Yeah, all right. So bondage, I think one thing I wanted to say about that is that it does relieve people of always having to sexually perform and allows them to relax and not feel guilty about enjoying the sensation. So that is one benefit, huge benefit of being being tied up. And there's many, many kinds of bondage, which we're not going to talk about tonight because we talk a lot about that usually. I think the celibacy thing is really worth mentioning because...
All right, I'll let you mention it about my celibacy.
Sexual abstinence and the state of not being... actually sex with other people, it can be seen as character building, which I think it is doing for you.
It's discipline, darling.
However, it can also be seen as sexual repression with definite negative consequences. So
I still have sex with myself, so does that really count? It's not full-on celibacy.
I think it counts. I think that counts. So I really wanted to talk about this really interesting piece about these cocktails. Cocktails are croptophilia, arousal from feces. Arousal from soiled objects is misophilia, and urophilia is arousal from urine. So these cocktails is a term used in sex play to describe the drinking of bodily fluids. You wanted to talk about it. Look at you squirming. Blood, semen, urine, enema contents from a glass or a chalice. So be careful.
It sounds very ritualistic.
Because these body fluids may carry bacteria and viruses, and cocktails are not really considered safe sex, just so you know. So there's the golden cocktail, the enema cocktail, the blood and semen cocktail. People like to do these things. Who knows?
Yes, they do. I've had a few boyfriends actually ask me to do them.
I think that the coitus mammalia is arousal from female breasts. And our lovely Hugh, our very well-known listener, he called in to talk about the large breasts that he loves so much, and that there's all these magazines for them and everything. And it's true. So, and my most recent wonderful lover, who likes to do a lot of this coitus mammalia between the breasts, and it's actually a nice fucking practice. It works very well if you have a natural penis, because the foreskin does its wonderful thing between the breasts. You don't need any lube. It works great. And then there's the interfemoris, which I think is very popular as well, between the thighs. And actually, I heard a recent friend of mine told me about his up until he got married, that was all they ever did, was the coitus interfemoris.
Really?
So they just fucking the thighs, and I guess the cock would rub against the outer labia and the clitoris, and you could actually come that way quite easily. So that's a nice safe sex practice, as long as you don't ejaculate on the labia and get pregnant from that, or
that's what, a dry
whatever
humping.
Have you dry humping. Now the cum etiquette, I thought this was very interesting. Ejaculate or vaginal secretions, ungation, the consistency, the flavor, and the quantity varies from person to person. So it seems to be genetic and age-related, and the consistency of ejaculate changes almost immediately after release by becoming thicker, which I think is very interesting to talk about the different ways of the flavor of the ejaculate varying, determined by factors listed by, like, say, bitter. Is cigarettes or marijuana intake, alcohol intake?
Definitely.
A bitter flavor of ejaculate. A sharp flavor?
Mm-hmm. Is red meats, sperm, can you imagine? Asparagus, broccoli, spinach, and some vitamins, maybe vitamin B. And moderate, having one or two of the sharp ingredients and none of the bitter ones. Mild vegetarian, lots of celery, so there is some truth
yes,
to that.
Yes, mild with the celery,
and no
yes.
sperm. Sweet, borderline diabetic, or...
Diabetic. Borderline diabetic or diabetic.
Okay.
So, and then I think a lot of what we said last week
about pineapple?
Pineapple. Well, that will also. So a man who's ejaculated several times within a couple of days will also have an increasingly milder flavored ejaculate. So your first ones, if you haven't come for a couple of days, it will be a little bit more bitter, a little bit more sharp flavored. But they talk about women also ejaculating and sort of the odor and the smell and taste of the different ejaculates from women. We're not talking about schmegma, no.
I'm curious what schmegma is.
It's basically that kind of oily, thick, white stuff that is in underneath the foreskin of men and underneath our clitoral hood. Usually around the glans penis and the glands of the clitoris, the actual button of the clitoris. And it's sort of a white, strong-smelling, kind of oily, thick kind of substance. And it's basically a very strong smell.
Gotcha.
Very strong smell and taste. And that's usually what we're wanting to clean off of ourselves before we have sex, is the schmegma. Love that word. Anyway, so a small percentage of women have this ejaculate from the Skene's glands, and they also ejaculate from the urethral opening, which is from the urethral sponge, the male prostate kind of thing inside a woman is the urethral sponge. So these sort of types of ejaculate that come from women are definitely not urine, but they also get changing of flavors depending on different things. So I thought that was a very interesting.
I
mean, it's not unusual sex practices, more so than it was just like the encyclopedia was telling me something I thought was very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Fetishes, huge. There's just so many different types of fetishes, and what we thought was really interesting, Julie and I had this conversation earlier in terms of last week, we were talking about where we thought fetishes were in regards to
inanimate
objects, but it can actually be with where you're in love with a certain part part of somebody's body, whether it's their penis, whether it's their breasts.
Legs, hair. So I always thought it was not actually... It had to be something inanimate, and the rest of them were philias. And mm-hmm. I got corrected, and around it, you can have a breast fetish, a leg fetish, a hair fetish, that kind of thing. But it's because you replace the human with the
an object and
the piece of the thing.
Which, as Hugh was talking about
partial thing.
In terms of the breasts.
So now I've been corrected. It is a fetish, and it is also inanimate. So shoes, fur, latex, leather, hats, gloves, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Panties, jock straps, used condoms. People kind of get off on this sort of thing.
They even have in Japan, you can actually buy used underwear.
Yes, yes, of a virgin, I'm sure. So a fetish that it can actually require progressively increased intensity in order to achieve orgasm. So like, for example, a hair fetishist may first experience orgasm by fantasizing about hair, but soon he's going to want to see it and watch the woman comb it and touch it and masturbate into it and then possess it by actually cutting it off a non-consenting stranger. So fetishes also, they kind of require progressively increased intensity is one of the things about
fetishes. Serial killers actually like chopping off females' hair because it gets rid of their femininity.
Mm. One of the things I find a little bit unhealthy about fetishes is that you do have this increasing need mm-hmm. for it to be more intense, but also that you dismember a person. Like if they have a mastectomy because they have breast cancer, you're no longer attracted to them.
Yeah.
You know, and or if they cut their hair off, then you're not interested in them anymore because you have this fetish of hair. So I don't know if necessarily it's
the healthiest thing in the world.
It should be balanced. But you know, anyway, so the fetish thing that you went to last weekend and the bizarre fetish ball, we're going to be seeing a lot of typical fetishes around fur and latex and rubber and leather,
PVC
and all that stuff, underwear, people wearing, you know, and flagellating each other, beating each other, that kind of thing. And so it's sort of a common practice, this fetish.
There was even
fetish.
A rack there, actually, that night,
oh.
where there was a guy who had hooks all through his back, and he was getting stretched out on the rack where they put all the hooks in there to stretch him out. It kind of scared me, actually, to be honest. I mean, I don't mind a little spanking, but that's a little bit too much for me. And they had the torture room set up as well.
Yeah, it's too much for me, too. I saw this one. Actually, it was quite beautiful, but it was also very creepy. Mm. Was this one person who had been stitched with feathers, long feathers, and then they walked around the bar with these feathers sticking out of their back, which had been stitched into their back.
Into the skin?
Into the skin. So, and I saw them putting the feathers in with the needles and everything, and thick, you know, big bird feather things, being stalks, being put into their back.
I'll have to.
And then walking around, being, obviously the feathers were moved by people because it's like any other set of wings, mm-hmm. it's going to be moved. And I can't imagine. I mean, wow. Anyway, not for me.
I can almost imagine it because I know when I used to have pubic hair. Sorry, too much information for the listeners. But
not for me. I like to know about your pubic hair.
Thank you, darling. Mm-hmm. But in regards to that, it's that whole thing where you have somebody run their fingers through it, and it feels really, really good. So I can imagine with the feathers on the back, that'd probably feel almost nice, where it's just like it's getting brushed over so slightly.
We've been kind of numbed already, so it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, and it's just in the skin. Anyway, these are unusual sex practices we're talking about
That's
tonight.
That's true. And this...
Gang bangs. Yes. Sorry, we're getting to the glory holes. What is a glory hole?
I was wondering that, actually.
It's a groping apparatus as well, which
okay.
is a barrier between yourself and the organ that you are engaging yourself with.
For example?
So people would strategically place holes. It's a very common practice, actually. Glory holes, groping apparatuses are very common. They're in the gay world, especially.
In the bathrooms where you can stick the penis in through the
mm-hmm. through It's a little harder for women to do this, but they're back in the 1800s, 1900s, and I'm sure our Peter Tupper can confirm this.
Mm-hmm.
There was these three-holed bloomers, which are now crotchless panties, where, you know, you'd have these big panties with just like a little slit where basically you had the lover of you, the one that was going down on you, would have to focus purely on your labia, your genitals. And so that was a glory hole as well.
I like that, actually.
Yeah, and I think
we should bring that back.
Yeah, I should bring that back, yeah.
Yeah, it's something better than crotchless panties.
I have, one of my biggest fantasies is this glory hole thing with like three or four cocks sticking out of a wall that I could just didn't see what they were attached to or who, and just like different colors and shapes and just doing different things with just the cock.
That would be really sexy.
I think it'd be kind of fun.
You know what? I wonder if you got that from growing up watching Porky's.
Only my friend Caroline would know about me and my movies growing up. All right, so another one I thought this was kind of cute was the unusual sex practice, or the philia, called inunction, which is basically the act of rubbing ointment or lather or body oil, lathering up and rubbing people with oil or against a partner, and then basically sliding against each other. So I think during the 60s, this was very popular, the Mazzola party, right? It's like all participants would undress, rub their bodies with oil, and then wrestle or play on some plastic sheet. And I think we should reenact this.
We'll have to pull out the twister board and do this,
exactly.
Darling. Just make sure people don't fall over and you get them to sign a waiver beforehand.
Exactly. And there are actually bathhouses in Bangkok, Thailand that offer similar service. Like, they're very popular.
It is very popular. There's a lot of strippers, actually, who, for their floor show, actually like spoiling oil all over themselves, which ruins the stage for the rest of the dancers. Because they like being all lathered up.
And then they're messed up with the people slipping and sliding.
Exactly.
Right.
Or the male dancers. But what about the lactophilia?
Well, this is back to the breasts, right? I mean, this is all about the nursing. So the lactophilia is the secretion of milk, and the philia attached to the fact that people get sexual arousal by lactating breasts. And I personally have a huge thing with it, and I cannot wait until my breasts are producing milk, because I even ask every lover, potential boyfriend I have, how they feel about sucking on my lactating breasts. Like, would they drink my milk? And they're, you know, if they say no, then I'm like, okay, thanks, I'll never see you again. And I just think it's like so hot. I look very forward to that.
I just want to know what it tastes like.
I have tasted it.
And is it
because my
sweet?
Girlfriend had a baby, and she let me suck on her breasts, and I was so excited by it. It was awesome. And you know, there's very healing powers in this milk.
There
I
is.
Mean, obviously, there's like it's the food of all of us. We should be eating for the first year of our lives. So obviously lots of good things in there. And there's also the orgasm factor. I've heard from several of my friends that have had babies that they have had orgasms
from their child,
from breastfeeding. Yeah. Because it is an ejaculate thing, right? Like when you begin
and the
to...
Oxytocin kicks in,
exactly. Look, you're so smart. You're learning all these things.
Learning from the best.
So this milk, you do need oxytocin to spurt the milk from the nipple. Mm-hmm. And so it does, there is, and then that orgasm. So if you have an orgasm, women that are lactating, if they have an orgasm, they will always spurt milk out of their breasts. So often women that are lactating feel kind of embarrassed by having sex because all of a sudden their breasts start to like produce milk and gush all over the place. Well, I say, hey, if you're into like bodily fluids, you know, you've got to be into bodily fluids to be into sex, kind of thing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if the milk starts to pour, let it pour. If you're having your period, put down a red sheet, buy some red sheets or red blankets and lay that shit down and have some gory sex. Why not?
Or fuck in the shower.
Sure. Exactly. Whatever. The point is it's just like, you know, we're humans. We're not clean in that way. We do make all kinds of messy, fluid things that come out, and it's all good. Lap them up. Although I don't put the bum stuff in there.
Well, yeah, let's not go there.
Some people like it. Well, we don't know how healthy they are, but
Or eating underwear that you've worn for 5 days.
There was one of these things that there was this picture in this book about the unusual sex practices by Brenda Love, PhD. She there's a picture of a glass table, and so this guy's lying under the glass table, and go ahead and answer it. Lying under the glass table and basically masturbating and pooing on the glass table while they masturbated. Very interesting.
Oh, hey, who
is this? Is this someone we want to have on the air?
It's Charles.
Oh, hi, Charlie. He probably does want to be on the air. What is he? Oh,
so you want to talk about... Oh, we're just going to get you on the air. Hang on one second.
All right. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, hello. I turn on the radio and all I hear is about Julia's lovely lactating nipples.
Well,
is that one of your fetishes?
I'd have to say that... this guy just almost ran a red light. Sorry about that. I'm driving the car here.
You're calling and dialing?
Yeah, I literally got off the tennis court and heard the conversation, and I had to weigh in. I would say that if you do end up sort of lactating in the moment of passion, mm-hmm. most guys, they can easily be convinced that it was them who caused it, and they'll want a trophy for it. So it's more like a badge of honor to cause something like that.
Nice. So it'd be like a G-spot ejaculant as well.
Oh, yeah. You just say, oh, my God, I've never done that before. You're just turning me on so bad. And the guys will be like, oh, awesome.
But then don't you think you'd be like, okay, suck it up, baby. Suck it. Suck my tits. Drink my milk, whatever. You don't think that the guy would do it?
Sued if you ended up, he actually choked to death because he's... But it'd be the same thing of a guy who ejaculates so much if you're going to swallow.
Yeah. It's true, you know. It would be sweet justice because it would taste a little bit better.
the breast milk, you mean, Charles?
Yeah, then the semen. And right. As somebody who is still currently breastfeeding, I can say that it does taste better than a man's semen.
Oh, and you've tasted this, have you?
Yeah.
Oh, you have? Excellent. I'm glad to hear that, Charles. I'm glad to hear that you've had some experience with the semen, because did you hear us earlier in the show when we were talking about the different flavors and what causes the bitter and the strong and the sweet and the all that with ejaculate?
Well, you see, I'm a vegetarian, and so it eventually gets to the conversation whenever I'm dating somebody.
Uh-huh.
Is that true? And then
yes.
And then sometimes you have to be a little scientific about it.
Well, you listen to the podcast later, since it sounds like you've been driving while the show's been on, and you can hear it. And you can hear the part about the ejaculate. And yes, Mr.
Awesome.
Vegetarian, you do have better flavored ejaculate. So,
all right, thanks. Love you guys.
Carry
Thank
on.
Thank you. Thanks for listening.
All right, so the last few philias here quickly, Caroline's mentioned it a few times tonight already, which is called misophilia, and it refers to becoming aroused by smelling, chewing, or rubbing against a foul-smelling...
soiled jockstrap, pair of panties, menstrual pad, bra, or other objects. The most common secretions are used vaginal, or actually not just vaginal, genital discharge, menstrual blood, feces, blood. Locker rooms provide abundant odors for
the milk.
Milk?
Abundant odors for the misophile. They often pilfer used jockstraps.
Necrophiliacs who prefer decaying flesh as opposed to a fresh corpse fall into this category. There's one case that I actually thought was really interesting that's mentioned in this book. It involves a male who was almost blind since birth. He was compensated for his loss of sight by enhanced smell and touch, and he confessed to wanting to mutilate and wallow and eat a person, and he was only able to find animals to do this with. I guess his semen must have tasted really bitter, but it...
Oh, my God.
Attempts to convince his grandmother to leave him her body were unsuccessful. His most common behavior consisted of searching for garbage and eating feces.
So now these are perverse sex crimes
in history.
So
I'm kind of curious. We should turn to page 130 and find out what that is.
Oh, my God. No, we only have a few minutes.
Okay.
Now, we only have a few minutes. So because we're doing the Bizarre Fetish Ball on Saturday night.
Masks are huge.
These are common. And I like this because it was a very interesting little piece here. Very popular during the 18th century. Prostitutes originally used them to hide their identity. But later they became popular among women of higher social status because they provided anonymity between lovers or from gossips and spies in these higher worlds. So, or in different social standings. So these women would wear these to the theater so that others would not see them blushing by any kind of thing that was happening on the stage. And they would wear them in the garden so that they could flirt in public. So masquerade balls were actually organized, and this tedious requirement of proper social introductions not only became unnecessary, but at many parties it was mandatory that people not reveal their identity at all. And I think that's a very interesting thing about masks.
It is.
So these flirtations...
Well, it gives you permission to do what you can and what you want to do without owning up to it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I also
taking any responsibility.
Totally. And what I find also interesting about it is when we had Peter Tucker on a few weeks ago, he was mentioning in regards to just fashion in general, which is one of the reasons we do want to have him on for our show about fetish fashion. But he was saying that a lot of times mainstream fashion designers pick up their ideas from prostitutes. And I mean, mm-hmm. it's interesting that this is happening way
Again,
back in the 18th century.
The masks.
With the masks.
Yeah, and this sort of flirtations and the roving hands at different events provide part of this very intriguing entertainment for an otherwise sexually repressed society. So I think it's interesting because it took more than 100 years for these masquerade balls to be suppressed by these disapproving religious leaders. So yay for the masks. Maybe we'll wear some at the Bizarre Fetish Ball.
That could be really sexy. If you guys want, you should email in and tell us what you want us to wear.
And
I think you might like that.
And tell us that you want a free ticket because the tickets are available and we are going to give some away.
Yeah, so email us and we hope you enjoyed tonight's show.
Julie and I are going to be... Go.
Yeah, we're over time. Julie and I are going to be back next week with another fresh and lively juice box. But we really hope you come out to the Fetish Ball and keep us company because we're virgins to this, kind of, sort of. Well, we can pretend we are. I'm celibate, so I'm almost a virgin these days.
But she's really loving. She's loving the power.
I am really digging this virginity factor, right, even though I'm not really a virgin. But
your vagina is becoming more and more virginal as it's not penetrated, except for by your little hands.
Fingers.
Your little teensy fingers. So
my
now
fingers are huge.
Stay tuned for Hans Closes Misery Hour with Marianne. Coming up next on CATR, he is a very sexy man to be miserable with, I have to say. Mm-hmm. I hate to leave that one because I love it. I was going to edit it out this week. The very sexy man to be miserable with, because I was like, well, you know, we got to come up with something new now.
But he is a very, very sexy man to be miserable with. It's just, you know what? He's a very sexy man. We're just not really miserable with him because he sends us into a glow of euphoric. euphoric glow as Julia's giggling and flirting.
He popped a button on his pants.